Hello again, everybody. This is Lance Russell with Championship Wrestling with another big week. Join us right now.
Hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show. I am Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And on this episode of the Double Dropkick Show, we are the podcast where we talk about the wrestling you grew up with, the wrestling you need to watch now, and stuff. And in this episode, all right, we are getting ready to do a very long, in-depth series. And this episode is going to be a teaser for that series that's going to begin at our next recording session.
Mm-hmm. Episode 150, we've decided we'll kick this off.
Yes, so episode 150. So you'll hear this, and then there may be some other episodes about some other things, but episode 150 is when that will begin, and it won't be every episode, but it will be an
It'll be most of them.
It'll be an ongoing series. Mark, you mentioned a few episodes ago, you told people to go on the network to the vault to October of 1987.
Yeah.
The 605 show, which I didn't get, and I'm looking forward as we go back and recap some of this, going back and watching this.
Mm-hmm.
What happened in October 1987, Jim Crockett Promotions?
Well, really, like I was going to say before I get started, every year about this time, we always do a soft reboot.
Yes.
We started out and it was, what's your top five, underrated wrestlers, or top five tag team wrestlers, or your heel turns, your baby face turns, your cringeworthy moments and things like that. We started out doing that. And then we really got into like the indie wrestling stuff. And then we decided, well, let's talk about comic books and let's talk about movies, and we still try to do some of that. But I thought, man, this year there's been so much new content added to the WWE Network. Yes. Good content that I've been wanting to see. They recently added and I think it's every episode from 1988 and 1989 of the 605 TBS show. Mm. Which I didn't miss.
Right.
Saw them all then, haven't seen them since, but that was the flagship show during that era. That was the flagship show that showed all the major angles, all the big promos. If something big happened on the other shows, they would recap it on the Saturday night show. So I went back. I wanted, before I started 88 and get into 89, I felt like I ought to watch the very tail end of 87.
Right.
So I pulled it up and got looking. And for the era we're going to be talking about, I think this is a very important show.
Yeah.
For one reason. And that's the opening match on October 17th, 1987. It starts out, there's just a little short clip.
Yeah.
Of Hiro Matsuda is going to demonstrate the sleeper hold on the referee Tommy Young. But instead of just demonstrating how he does it, he winds up taking Tommy Young out.
Yeah.
Then they cut away from it, and we get the opening contest that night. A young man from Venice Beach, California, making his debut after the purchase of the UWF.
Yeah.
Sting is in the opening match versus Gladiator number one on the 605 TV show, and he wins with the Stinger Splash, and they don't even call it the Stinger Splash. They just say a splash into the corner.
Yeah.
And he wins the match. And it's just important, man, because it's his very first appearance on this show, the show that he would become the focal point of several months later. As we get into 88, you'll see Sting step up and take a more prominent role.
In the show notes, I'm going to link to a site that I am on now that lists every card that Jim Crockett ran in 1987, including the entire format for this show that you're describing.
Okay.
Because as I'm scrolling through here, listen, I'm looking for Greenville and seeing if I went to any of these shows. But like I said, I'm looking at the show that you're talking about, and we're also going to do, as part of this, I'm doing some research on the purchase of UWF. because that ended up just being a bad thing.
We'll get there.
Bad for everybody.
Right.
Except for Sting.
Was it bad for everybody?
Not for Sting.
So what I'm going to try to do, I think my strong point when we do this show has always been to verbalize these angles.
Yeah.
Verbalize the stuff that happened. I got a note on every match that happened that night. Nobody's going to care that the Sheep Herders with Johnny Ace won a squash match.
Right.
Okay. Nobody. So I'm not going to, I don't think there's a reason to really rehash all that. But you have to understand, in the midst of all this going on, they did a Starrcade 87 Control Center update, which I used to like that because they'd talk to the guys that were
on,
and they'd bring different people on. And this time, they officially announced on this episode, Ron Garvin had beaten Ric Flair for the title.
Right.
And they officially announced the rematch for this. And the babyface, mind you, babyface Ron Garvin.
Yeah.
Makes the statement that winning that title was more important to him than the day he got married and the day his children were born.
Oh, wow.
And I just found that to be a strange thing for a babyface to say.
Right.
They also were talking about Garvin's not going to defend the title. He's not going to defend the title till Starrcade.
Right.
Which says something about his drawing power, I think. If he was drawing a ton of money, they'd have had him on top everywhere defending.
But right.
I think everybody realized this was a misstep, and they needed to get it off of Flair and shake it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And I guess they just thought Garvin was the guy to do it. And
I read a really long article on this, and the thinking, and what this article said was that they were doing it just a quick switch.
Right.
And that a lot of the guys were just like, well, you're telling me this is going to be a one-time shot. And basically, Ronnie Garvin was like, hey, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And that he was the guy that stepped, and they were like, hey, we're going to give you the belt, but then you're not going to defend it for 60 days, and most of the guys didn't want to do that.
Right.
But Ronnie Garvin, he didn't volunteer, but he was one of the few guys that
was willing to do it.
That was willing to do it. And I even at that age, which would have been 12, I just thought that was all weird.
Yeah, I didn't get it at the time. I still don't get it.
Yeah,
I don't understand I just felt like there were other guys they could have done that with.
Yeah,
when I got. Which he had a program going on, but Barry Windham and guys like that.
At the time, Ronnie Garvin was using a top rope sunset flip for his finisher.
Yeah.
And I just, yeah.
Now, one thing about Ronnie Garvin, he was believable.
Yeah.
He was a believable guy. I wouldn't want to get in a fight with him.
You know the issue that I always had with him?
No knee pads.
No knee pads.
Then we also get a recap of Terry Taylor was the UWF TV champion, and Nikita Koloff was the TV champion in Crockett at the time. And Eddie Gilbert was with Terry Taylor, and he came out and they stole the TV title from Nikita.
Right.
But not before they teased Nikita hitting the Russian sickle on Terry Taylor, which goes against everything that we see today.
Yeah.
Which is, let's just do everything on TV. Let's give everything away on TV. And they didn't even give you Nikita hitting the clothesline.
Right.
On Terry Taylor, because they wanted you to watch the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
There's also, during this whole time, they're going to be running a card up in New York, and they constantly are promoting that they're fixing to invade New York and
the
other during all this going on. So that was cool. And then as I'm watching it, I just saw, they always bringing out Jim Crockett Jr. to talk. And I just thought, this guy makes Johnny Ace look like The Rock when it comes to charisma, man. He has got zero charisma. I mean, just awful. This was when the big rivalry was, all the promos were about the UWF versus Crockett Promotions at the time, because Barry Windham was going to be facing Steve Williams.
Right.
For the UWF title, which we'll get to, we'll talk a little bit. I can tell you the way the match ends, where they had been friends the whole time.
And right.
It was all built on friendship, and then there's a leapfrog, and Dr. Death gets low-blowed. And anyway, so what I'll also try to do is highlight on these shows the stuff that I think is worth watching. And one thing that'll always be worth watching is you get an Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard match on this. And it's not just Arn and Tully. It's Arn and Tully versus George South and Rocky King, which people are always asking us to talk about the best enhancement guy. I don't use the term jobber when I'm talking about some of these guys, because they're enhancement guys. That was their job, was to make Arn and Tully look good. Yeah. And they did. I mean, Arn hits just an incredible, incredible spine buster on George South. They do the slingshot suplex. Arn does the gourd buster. I mean, it's just about getting over their moves.
Yeah.
And David Crockett and Tony Schiavone on commentary are explaining why wins and losses matter.
Mm.
And I like that, man. I like to hear announcers making the winning and losing does matter.
Yes.
Back to some things we've talked about earlier on our Patreon exclusive show.
Yes.
Just see, like, if you're not, nobody builds big stars by having them lose.
Correct.
Eddie Gilbert cuts a great promo. We're seeing the other great thing is at the beginning they teased the Hiro Matsuda. So the reason that this all happens is because Dusty Rhodes has been training with Johnny Weaver, and he's learned to do the Weaver Lock, which is the sleeper hold. And he's going to be at Dusty's facing Lex Luger for the U.S. title at Starrcade.
Right.
So Weaver has taught him the Weaver Lock so he can defeat Lex Luger. Lex Luger's a member of the Horsemen now.
Yeah.
And J.J. Dillon brings in Hiro Matsuda.
Right.
Because he is also a master of the sleeper hold. And apparently, and I haven't seen it, but I'm looking to go back and find this footage just so I can see it myself. Probably won't bring it up again. Back in like 68. Matsuda and Weaver had a series of matches where Matsuda just handed Weaver his lunch. You know what I mean? He ate his lunch. I mean, so, and this all plays into Johnny Weaver kind of being scared of Hiro Matsuda.
Correct me if I'm wrong. In 86, when, I think it's 86, when Luger first comes to Crockett from Florida, doesn't he come with Hiro Matsuda?
I think he
did. And then J.J. Dillon buys his contract from Hiro Matsuda. And, I'm thinking that because at first Luger's just an associate of the Horseman.
Right.
At first, he came.
And then they did the deal where Ole wanted to, and it was a real life thing. I mean, Ole's kid was getting older, and he was doing some amateur wrestling stuff, and Ole wanted to go watch that. So they used that as the way to get, because they were going to give Ole the time off.
Yeah.
But they kicked him out of the Horsemen because they were saying nothing's more important than the Horsemen.
And right.
Saying, wait a minute, my family's important to me.
Yeah.
We'll get to some of that. But this angle.
Yeah.
So he puts the sleeper hold on Tommy Young just to demonstrate how to do it, and he winds up cinching down on it, and he chokes Tommy Young out, who just flops around like a fish.
Yeah.
Then Johnny Weaver comes out, and he does the old school slapping Tommy Young on the back of the neck to wake him up, which I love. And, Young's like, what just happened? Well, anyway, Hiro Matsuda attacks Johnny Weaver.
Yeah.
You have to see Johnny Weaver sell this sleeper hold.
Yeah.
It is incredible. The look on his face, he looks like Frankenstein is the closest thing I can compare it to, the way he scrunches his face up, and then he starts bleeding from his mouth.
Okay. Can we talk about this real quick?
That's what we're doing.
Okay. Because I remember seeing that on the Saturday show.
Uh-huh.
And Weaver goes...
Yeah, they like on this show, they'll show the stuff that happened on the Worldwide Wrestling.
This is what I remember. I remember going to school Monday, talking about wrestling, and the debate was, did Johnny Weaver put something in his mouth?
Right.
And I think he put something in. Oh, man, why would a sleeper? But we were all believed that Hiro Matsuda was trying to kill him.
Do you know how they used to, what they, people thought it was a blood capsule?
I don't know. I'm asking. Can we talk about this?
Yeah, they used to draw their own blood, put it in a condom, put the condom in their mouth, and then bite down on it. And they put the condom in warm water so the blood wouldn't clot, and leave it backstage, and it would stay warm. And then when it come time for the match, they'd take it out, toss it in their mouth when they got out there, and then bite down on the condom and tear it. And that's how you do that.
If 12-year-old Heath Mulligan had known that, his desire
you wouldn't have
wanted to be a wrestler.
Well, I was going to say you wouldn't have just had to throw all those condoms away. You would have been able to have done something with them.
Hey, you're not funny. So then, of course, comedy to me.
Of course, Dusty comes out.
Right,
he makes a save for Johnny Weaver, and then cuts a great promo on Hiro Matsuda and Lex Luger. So we see that. Then Arn and Tully come out. They have recently won the titles from the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah,
and I've always said this: if you beat a guy, and then you immediately go out and say he ain't no good and he can't do this, and then who did you beat?
Right.
But they go out and say just the opposite. The Rock and Roll Express, great tag team, but on that night they just wasn't good enough to beat us. You know, we were just that much better on that night. Put over how much guts they had, how great they were in the ring. I like to hear that. I think that's a lesson in cutting a promo about your opponent.
Right.
To me, is to talk about their heart, to talk about how strong they are, how good they are, what kind of wrestler they are. So that when you beat them, you've beaten somebody. It's not, you didn't beat a guy that you spent 6 months telling everybody didn't deserve to be in the ring with you.
Right, right.
Then we get a very, very early team up of Michael Hayes and Jimmy Garvin coming out to Bad Street. This is before they were the Freebirds. They were just a tag team. And I just, three notes that I had. Number one, Michael Hayes' charisma is off the charts.
Yeah.
He just is a charismatic guy. Jimmy Garvin is, to me, one of the most underrated wrestlers from the 80s. And Precious is one of the most underrated valets.
Yes.
How good she was. Just the way she primped and, the way she'd fix his hair and spray the hairspray. And they were such a great act together. So I was a big fan of theirs. Ronnie Garvin beat a guy up, did the Garvin stomp. Then Flair, because this great, great promo that you need to see where he defends the NWA. He talks about the promo that Eddie Gilbert and Terry Taylor cut earlier about everything. It's just this impassioned promo about how Crockett Promotions and the NWA is the greatest wrestling on the planet. And he's losing his mind, and then he turns his attention to Ronnie Garvin, and in one of the greatest quotes, when he starts talking about why he's going to win his title back, why he needs the title back, he says, "I'll be damned if you'll ever see me in a bar telling some floozy or some geek that I used to be a world heavyweight champion."
Wow.
And I thought, man, what a great line.
Wow.
From Ric Flair, man.
And so, all right, let me just pause you right there. So you just described three of the top heels ever, but yet in their promos, the titles mean something.
Mm-hmm.
For them, it's about the titles, it's about the money, it's mm-hmm. about the women, and it's not just about going out there and having a good match and getting to this is awesome chant.
Right.
Like, there's a motivation.
There. Right. It's to win. It's to be the best.
That's why I like champion. That's why I like Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, me too.
Because I believe, he ain't in it for the, passion.
No, he just wants to be the best. Yeah. He just wants to beat somebody up. And then to finish off the night, always good, Midnight Express with Jim Cornette, who have just a squash match against some guys. And Cornette does commentary, and then they cut a promo. And that's how it goes off. Nothing spectacular. That's the main event.
I would be interested, as I'm looking at this card, all the matches very short. I would be interested to compare, because now everybody's like, SmackDown had 33 minutes of wrestling, 42 minutes of promos, and they kind of break down the whole show. And then they're like, boy, wrestling used to be so different and so much better. And I'm like, I'm looking at this, and I think...
So basically, you had Sting fought a jobber, the Sheepherders fought a jobber, Arn and Tully fought job guys. Terry Taylor won a squash match.
Hayes and Garvin.
Yeah, Hayes and Garvin won a squash match. Ronnie Garvin won a squash match. And the Midnight Express won a squash match. All those matches, I didn't stick a timer out on it, but all of them were probably less than 4 or 5 minutes.
This website, yes. The longest match I'm seeing here was 3 minutes and 57 seconds. Right,
and the rest of it was promos and angles, and that's what wrestling used to be.
Yeah.
It was about drive. Like, they even, and I don't think it's on, but there's one episode, I have yet to see the Road Warriors appear on TV.
Yeah.
But there's always an advertisement of, here's the Road Warriors. If you want to see them, you need to go out and buy tickets to go to this show, and this show, because the Road Warriors will be there. There's every episode has a music video of Dusty Rhodes walking to the ring and Ric Flair walking to the ring, and they do these little video packages on everybody that by WWE standards today are not great, but by those standards, it was, you need to come out to the show to see these guys.
So, so that was October 17th. So I just want to...
We're doing our gimmick here, folks. I watched the wrestling. Heath got the lineup pulled up on his computer over there. This is our gimmick, man.
No, but what I want to say is this, is everything... I just want to back up what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
You watched the TV was selling the live show.
Right.
WWF, they never, during Raw, tell you where they're going to be anymore. So
these guys have got a card in New York and the Nassau Coliseum, and I know that because they keep telling me.
Yeah, it
they're
going to
be on this day.
It was the day before StarCast.
Yeah, I know.
So
because I've been watching
the next.
But what
day,
I'm saying is, everybody in their promo,
right,
is telling you,
yeah,
we're going to be in New York in the Nassau Coliseum, and everybody is talking about the UW in their promos addressing the UWF versus Crockett Promotions. Everybody's talking about Luger and Rhodes, and everybody's talking about Flair and Garvin in their promos.
So on the day, this is October 17th. October the 18th, which is a Sunday, there are 3 Crockett shows: Atlanta, Roanoke, and Detroit. Ricky Morton and Telly Blanchard do the main event in Atlanta and Roanoke. They do an afternoon. But what I'm saying is, that's how strong their roster was. They did 3 shows in a day. I say all that because that Monday night, they're in Greenville. That's what I would have been interested in. That's what it would have been. None of these are squash matches, okay? No. Kendall Windham and the Italian Stallion fought the Cuban Connection. Now, even Nelson Royal defeated Denny Brown. The main events, Ricky Morton versus Telly Blanchard. You got the Midnight Express versus Chris Champion Sean Royal, who was...
the New Breed.
New Breed. Arn Anderson versus Robert Gibson and Tate Fistmatch. They didn't give you anything on TV.
No.
But when you went to Greenville, there weren't 10 job matches.
No, that was the point. I mean, right, they were... they were trying to sell you on the arena shows. You need to go out and see this live to see these guys face each other.
And see, now it's just a completely different business model. TNA does a completely different business. TNA does their show on TV so you can go to their arena show for free.
Yeah. All right.
That's why they're not making any money.
Could be. Could have something to do with it. So, that was the end of that show.
Yes.
Now, what you're going to get from me... is I'm going to watch every show in January.
Yeah.
And do a recap.
Yeah.
When we get together. If there's a Clash of Champions and or a pay-per-view, I will also address those.
Yes.
Talk about those. I'm not going to run down every single match.
Right.
Give an analysis of every single match. I'm going to talk about the good stuff. You should go back and check this out. So, for those that don't know, 88 and 89 were, and 90. Mm-hmm. 88 to 90 are probably my 3 favorite years ever.
Yeah.
In wrestling.
Yeah.
More so than the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
I was, that's what I was into, man, at that time, in both companies. I was really in both companies. So, I'm not going to run down what happens in 89 because we'll get there yet. But just a little idea of some of the things that happened in 88 that we'll be addressing. The beginning of the Flair versus Sting rivalry when Sting interrupts the Horseman party that's Ric Flair's Appreciation Day, which leads to the first Clash of Champions. Dusty comes to Magnum TA's aid with a bat. and is subsequently suspended, and a masked Avenger, right? Yes. In the Jim Crockett promotion.
Yes.
Windham and Luger win the tag titles, and if you don't know the end of this story, don't spoil it. You'll get the Fantastics. We'll talk about Fantastics versus Midnight Express, which had some great matches. Mm-hmm. The Midnights turning babyface and facing Arn and Tully in the intro of the original Midnight Express with a young Paulie Dangerously. We'll get Bam Bam Bigelow in Jim Crockett Promotions. The Road Warriors will turn on Sting and spike Dusty Rhodes' eye in a very controversial angle. There'll be 4 clashes and 3 pay-per-views that year, by the way. So there'll be 7 extra cards. Now, another thing that I like to do, I don't just like to talk about here's what happened on TV. I try to keep up with also here's what was going on behind the scenes at the time.
Right.
And I just ran down a little list of some behind the scenes things.
Mark's got notes and notes and pages.
Yeah. So I won't be talking about all of these just so everybody knows, but right. These are just some notes that I took that stuff that happened in 88.
Yeah.
And I'll pick out the best ones. We get the return of Ole Anderson as a babyface. We get Dr. Death Steve Williams arrested at an airport, and if you don't know that story.
Yeah.
Terry Taylor leaves for the WWF and becomes a Red Rooster. Michael Hayes gets fired. The Bunkhouse Stampede draws 6,000 fans in New York against the first Royal Rumble that was given away for free on the USA Network. We'll get a discussion of the Western States Heritage title,
which you can buy now on High Spots. I want to do that.
You should. We'll talk about the Rock and Roll Express's firing from Jim Crockett Promotions. We will get, because I love him, I think he is the, hands down, the most underrated manager in the history of the wrestling business that doesn't get talked about enough. We're going to talk about Gary Hart and Al Perez coming to Jim Crockett Promotions. And that will lead us into 89, one of my favorite feuds of all time. The first Clash of the Champion runs for free against WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Rumors of the Von Erichs appearing on the first Clash of the Champions.
Mm.
The Four Horsemen Vitamins. We'll be discussing that. NWA, you talk about the business model being go see the arena show. If you don't know, in 88 is the year that NWA Main Event launched on Sunday night on TBS, which would feature 3 matches with stars facing one another that you had never really seen on TV. And the, if I'm not mistaken, the first main event was 3 of the Horsemen against like Sting and Windham and maybe Michael Hayes, Jimmy Garvin. I don't remember.
Right.
Flair and Luger getting legitimately stopped for blood in Baltimore because the athletic commission told them if there's any blood, we're going to stop the match. And they figured out a way to use that in the finish. We will have 1988 doesn't have anything to do with Crockett, but that is the year that Bruiser Brody was murdered in Puerto Rico. So I've talked about it a lot. I really plan to do an in-depth analysis of the heat between the two of them, between him and Invader, going all the way back to the WWWF that a lot of people don't know about.
Wow.
So we're going to go all the way back to WWWF in the 70s and try to chronicle the Bruiser Brody murder from that moment and what happened and what went wrong. Jim Crockett moving west and how that represented the beginning of the end.
Yes.
The WWF invading the Greensboro Coliseum with a Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant main event. How did we not go to that?
Because back in 1988, Greensboro might as well be in California.
That's true.
So will you be addressing, as I'm looking at this, they're doing a lot of shows in California. Uh-huh. They're like, you hear about the plane.
Uh-huh. We're going to talk about all. I'm getting there.
Okay. I'm sorry.
See these notes?
I see them. Can I make a copy of the notes so I can, in the show notes, link to the appropriate thing?
We'll get there.
I want to leak it. WikiLeaks.
I know you do. Arn and Tully leave for the WWF with analysis of house show footage where they dropped the belts to the Midnight Express from my own personal tape collection that not many people have, but I do have a copy of that I received directly from Jim Cornette.
Whoa.
Yes, sir. You don't know about everything I've bought from Cornette. I talked to him up in somewhere, and he had a DVD with.
Oh, so it's a DVD.
Yeah, it's a DVD, Midnight Express Rarities. And somebody shot house show footage the night that Tully and Arn dropped the titles to them because it was just done. They had to do it. They didn't have time to build to it. And anyway, somebody shot footage of it, and I have that footage.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So we will discuss.
I think that should be a patron-only episode.
Maybe it will be. Some of these will be patron. But just by the way, some of these will be just for Patreon. I'm not going to discuss a lot of this stuff.
Right.
For free. I mean, you know, this is a lot of work for me.
Yeah.
For like, even just to break, like, used to I'd do a whole year of pay-per-views.
Yeah.
But even for me to do a month worth of shows, this is a lot of work.
But, and that's why I'm saying we can space it out.
Oh, absolutely. This is not going to be come in and knock three shows out just talking about this.
Right.
It may be one show, and then we'll talk about other stuff in between. Anyway, we're going to talk about the Lyle Alzado starring sitcom, Learning the Ropes. And then finally, Turner buys Jim Crockett Promotions with an in-depth discussion of Turner's history with wrestling and the legitimate heat between he and Vince McMahon that goes all the way back to Black Saturday. We'll see Dusty Rhodes out as Booker, and that's, you were talking about the money and spending all the money, that's when we'll discuss as Dusty begins to leave, and then Jim Herd taking over, leading us into 1989. And I don't have anything, I'm not going to tease 89 yet, because we're looking at, I mean, it could be a year before we're done with this.
Yeah.
But my hope, what I would like to see this series be, is go from January of 88, and hoping that they will put 1990 605 show up, and I want to go all the way through Sting winning his first title Great American Bash that year.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to get to, is to talk about all of that, because I think that's what people like, and I always try to watch all the matches, tell people, here, you can watch this, and then talk about some behind-the-scenes stuff. Yeah. Also, during 1988 is also first SummerSlam.
Yeah.
It is the rise of the Ultimate Warrior. It is the mega powers exploding.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on in WWF that I'll also be touching on, but it's not going to be an in-depth WWF thing.
Right.
This is, but I will be talking a lot about what's going on at WWF at the time.
Can I ask you, as I think about that period of time.
And I tell you what I may do is make, I may discuss all the Saturday Night Live, Saturday Night's main events.
Yeah.
And all the pay-per-views from 88 from WWF, and those will be Patreon exclusives.
Yes. When I think about that period of time in the NWA, Jim Crockett, it is amazing to me when I think about the business side of it and just the missteps that they took.
Uh-huh.
Trying to go, I mean, the Chicago Starcade and going to California in the private plane, but yet their product was so good.
It was, and it wasn't the California and the private plane that hurt them.
Right.
Just so, I mean, it was not, that's not what hurt them. To go from North Carolina to California in a plane didn't hurt that company.
Right.
What hurt that company was taking a plane from Greensboro to Greenville.
Right.
That's what, it took them longer, more than likely, to drive to the airport, get on the plane, get the plane fueled up, get the plane in the air, land the plane, get off of it, find a car. They could have driven from Charlotte to Greenville in an hour.
Yeah.
And it probably took, the flight, I'm sure, wasn't but 15 minutes.
Right.
But all the other stuff going into it, you could have just as easily have driven.
Right.
And just not wanting to do that.
Yeah.
Just the arrogance of taking the plane, you know, for an hour long, which will be an hour ride.
Yeah. Just so, and if you haven't listened to our show, What If Vince Had Bought Jim Crockett? In, was that 88 or 89? That's a good episode where we rebook everything and to build to WrestleMania 89.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fun episode to do. So you want to stay tuned. If you have not subscribed to the show, now is the time to use all of your willpower, to use all of your skill, to use all of your intestinal fortitude, to take your thumb in the podcast app and simply hit that subscribe button. Now's the time to do it. You listen, all right? If you just started listening, you've missed over 2 years of greatness.
Yeah.
But you, people are going to ask 10 years from now, where were you when this happened? Not when, where were you when Mark and Heath talked about this? Mm-hmm. People are going to ask.
Actually, what they'll ask themselves is, where were you when Mark talked about this and Heath interrupted him? That's what they're going, that's what they're going to ask. Where were you when Heath would tell the punchline when Mark was only halfway through the joke? Where were you at?
I thought I asked some fairly intelligent questions.
You did.
Okay.
You did. You just sometimes ask them before I've gotten to them.
Sorry. Listen.
You get so excited.
I do.
There's no way. He's going to forget. He's going to forget that Turner bought Jim Crockett Promotions. I better go ahead and bring it up while he's talking about the Midnight Express.
But yeah, now's the time, whether it's...
We'll also see, by the way, J.J. Dillon leave.
Right.
In 88. So.
J.J. Dillon, who probably doesn't get the credit he deserves for how successful WWE was.
No, he doesn't. I mean, that's where he went. He went up there. He was Jim Ross before Jim Ross was Jim Ross.
Let me be the first to give him credit, and I would like to take credit for that. Copyright that credit. All right, so Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio app, all of them.
And
all of them have a subscribe option.
Let me just, before you start with the spiel, like, you know what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
You have the opportunity more so than ever to watch this stuff along with us.
Yes.
So I'm watching the last few months of 87 right now, but right. I'm just watching. I'm going to skip some of it.
Right.
Because I don't know that it's – I kind of know where it's going.
Yeah, I do want to talk about you talked about October. I do want to talk about that Starcade, which I'm going to go back and watch.
Oh, yeah, yeah, here. Yeah. And we may do that next time and talk about Starcade 87.
But, yeah, so you know where we're going. You can go ahead and start watching this stuff. And I would encourage you – listen, hey, I'd really encourage this. Go ahead and watch these shows in the vault. If you see something that we haven't, you know, we're getting to stuff.
Or if you want us to discuss something, you know, I mean.
Right. But I would say a couple of things. If you have a question about that, okay.
Uh-huh. And I guess that's what I meant. If you got a question.
You can tweet us questions about that. But if there is a certain thing that you want us to talk about, listen, all you got to do is become a patron.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/DoubleDropKick. $1 a month gets you an exclusive episode. We released an exclusive episode that was us talking on the way to getting ready for an actual wrestling show. What? Anyway, so there's that, and then
actual wrestling show.
Like I'm still in shock that. What's funny is Mark. We always talk about guys. Mark always talks about guys that never wash their gear. They just never wash their gear bag. So I have a bag that I take stuff in, and I just remembered that I had it on my clothes right there, wadded up and sweaty. We did another one where we did a free show that was Mark booking Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. We did another show where he booked the whole Raw roster that was just for patrons. So for $1 a month, you get that exclusive, at least one episode a month. For $5 a month, you get that episode. Plus, if you've got a website, podcast, business you want to promote, we'll promote that on the live show. And then for $10 a month, okay, $10 a month, you get the free episode. We promote your business, and you get a free autographed 8x10 of a Mid-Atlantic legend.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that's a great deal. The value of the picture you're going to get is going to be more than $10. according to Lloyd's of London. So, not Lloyd's of London, that's the insurance. Who's the big...
Christie's.
Christie's, that's right. So, everything that you're hearing, you can get more by becoming a patron. And you can also, on the website, doubledropkick.com, you can click on a banner. We recently did an episode of DVDs you need to own. There's links there. They're all affiliate links. You can listen, you go to Amazon, you buy something, it supports the show, and you didn't spend any extra money. Plus, you got something that you needed. Not something that you wanted, something that you needed. Mm-hmm. Something that helps make you a better person. Mm-hmm. Something that will improve your community, your quality of life. So you need to make sure to do that. Talk to us. Well, you can talk to me on Facebook, Heath Mulliken. The Wrestling You Grew Up With is our group. We're well over 5,000 members. Double Dropkick Show Facebook page. You need to like that. When we get to 2,500 likes, we're giving away a signed 18x24 Harley Race painting.
Mm-hmm. How are you going to decide who gets that?
I'm going to do a – I've got a computer program –
That'll randomly select one of our
people who's liked our page.
Gotcha.
So to be entered for that, you gotta like our page. We're also on Twitter at Heath Mulliken.
At the DDK Show.
You know, I don't know
what else to tell you.
Right. Well, yeah. You know, we appreciate you listening. We'd appreciate you being a patron.
Yes.
On Patreon.
They're patrons on Patreon.
That is it. I think this is the first episode in history that I said it right every time.
It may be.
So I might as well just say Patron one time. All right, hey, for the Double Dropkick Show, I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.